Hi, everybody. So the title of my presentation is Healthy Eating, Active Living, and Healthy Mind and Spirit, Community Partnership Strategies for Child Health. I have no conflicts of interest to disclose, and I would like to start off by thanking Mark Wallace and Vincent Atchity, who are back in the corner, my coworkers, for helping to collaborate and to make this project possible. So, health and well-being have, for too long, been put in a silo, apart from education and learning. Everybody mainly understands that without a good education, prospects for a good job with good earnings are pretty slim. But not as many people think of education as a crucial pathway to health. Yet there is a strong body of evidence that very consistently links education to health, even when other factors such as income are taken into account. There is a strong relationship and connection between these two sectors. When one is boosted, the other also gets a boost, and when one fails, the other is also failing. So education can lead to better jobs, but it could also lead to longer and healthier lives. College graduates live on average 9 years longer than individuals who have not completed high school. More educated people are less likely to have chronic diseases like type 2 diabetes and heart disease. They are less likely to be overweight or obese, and more likely to report positive health behaviors, such as getting physical activity or going to the doctor's office for a wellness checkup. Just looking at smoking alone, 27% of individuals without a high school diploma smoke, compared to only 8% of individuals with a high school diploma. So that's a pretty big disparity right there, just looking at that. So on the flip side, health also affects education. We know that healthy kids learn better in school. Physical activity supports academic achievement, so even moderate exercises like walking can increase brain activity. We knew that increased participation in PE class leads to better classroom behavior, better class grades, and better standardized test scores. We also know that kids who eat well learn better. So just an example, kids who eat school breakfast attend 1.5 more days of school per year and score on average 17.5% better on standardized math tests. So why does this relationship matter? So as public health professionals, the more that we can understand and recognize and communicate this relationship, the more potential we have to improve health. And especially communicating this to people that are outside of public health. The more that we can communicate this to decision makers and stakeholders, the more we can empower them to improve health. So, communicating this to the broad public. Whether you're talking to a school board or a community member or a teacher or a county commissioner or the media, it's absolutely key that we use simple communication and avoid public health jargon if we want to get this key relationship across. These are two sentences that I just pulled off of a document when putting together this presentation that was meant for public consumption about this relationship, and I'll read them real quick. Years of educational attainment is a key social determinant of health. Lack of adequate consumption of specific nutrients leads to decreased cognitive performance for elementary age students. These messages are great when we're in a room like this, but anyone outside of this room, unless they're in the social sciences field, they probably don't know what a social determinant of health is, so they're probably not going to understand when we're trying to communicate that relationship. So here are just some really simple communication messages as examples of if you're communicating this to anybody. Better education equals healthier lives. Healthy kids learn better. And healthy food plus active bodies equals kids equipped for success. Pictures also help when communicating. So clearly schools hold huge potential for improving health. There is currently over 50 million school students in the United States that spend a majority of their day at schools, or a big part of their day. So the question, how do you initiate a partnership with a school? Well, unfortunately, there's no magic bullet. Every school and every school district is different. Therefore, partnerships should look and feel different with every school. But here are four elements of successful school partnerships. I'll go more into detail on future slides. But number one, leadership support. Number two, establishing a connection to academic achievement. Number three, understanding time constraints. And lastly, shared responsibility for children. So the first one, school leadership support. This one seems kind of like a given, but getting the superintendent or principal on board with any sort of partnership is absolutely key. They are kind of like the chief marketers of a school, and they have the final decision making at the end of the day. So it doesn't really matter how committed a teacher or like a school wellness coordinator is to some sort of partnership. If they don't have the top leaders on board, then it's not likely to be as successful. So how do you get those leaders on board? Relating to academic achievement, this is so, so important. Being able to explain why your partnership will ultimately increase student achievement. This is what those school leaders have to report on at the end of the day, so this is what they're going to be concerned about. For example, I was once at a school board meeting in our county that I work in, and we were trying to convince them to adopt this physical activity, wellness in the classroom thing. And basically, they weren't listening to what we were saying until the first person said that it has the potential to improve grades and improve standardized test scores. And then it just totally changed the dialogue. People put their cell phones down on the table and actually started listening to what we had to say, and we're very receptive for that type of partnership. Next, understanding time constraints. There's a lot of pressure that schools feel for all kinds of meeting state and district standards in math, history, reading, and writing, and they all kind of feel like there's just never really enough instruction time for this. So any sort of partnership that's going to take away from this instruction time, they're not going to be very likely to enjoy. So just looking at the hours in a year for an average elementary school student, only about 1,000 of them are actually spent in school. So a lot of times when approaching a school about some sort of partnership, someone will say, oh, but it's only 5 minutes a day. But I've actually heard a superintendent say, well, you know what, that's 15 hours in the year, and we don't have that available in instruction time. So anything you can do to do some sort of environmental change, so for example, you know, serving healthy food for lunch, or things that happen after or before school. So some little examples of those things that work under time constraints: super quick 30-second exercise breaks that kids can take throughout the day. They like those. Incorporating movement into like math or a literacy lesson, or an after-school sports club. Next, viewing the responsibility for children's education as shared among the school, the family, and the community. Children spend about 70% of their waking hours outside of school. So it's best when families and communities work together. So when the three work together, schools, families, and communities, students do better in school and in life. Parents become more empowered. Teacher morale improves, schools get better, and communities grow stronger. So as I said, community groups are super critical partners. One of the key differences between high and low achieving students is how and with whom they spend their time with outside of school. So just a short list of potential community partners. There's after school programs like Boys and Girls Clubs or daycare centers. Recreational and cultural institutions like libraries or museums, local businesses, universities, faith organizations like youth groups, healthcare organizations, and government agencies. So, what can these community partners do to help improve health and education? I'll give some more examples of these on the next slides, but they can support a healthy environment for children, provide expanded learning opportunities, help to improve literacy and graduation rates, and connect students to employment and continuing education opportunities. So in terms of supporting a healthy environment, a daycare center can serve healthy food to kids. An after-school program can encourage physical activity in their program. A faith organization can promote healthy beverages. Or a business could encourage healthy behaviors to parent employees. We know about modeling theory that kids look to parents and adults for different healthy behaviors. So that's a great way to get businesses involved in promoting health. So in terms of providing expanded learning opportunities, after-school programs can link their content to school curriculum. Faith organizations can provide tutoring or academic support that's also linked to the school curriculum. And a university could provide family nights in math or literacy. And then lastly, in terms of employment and continuing education opportunities, businesses could provide job shadowing or career counseling. Universities can support and promote continuing education. And libraries could advise families about planning for children's future education and careers. So community health workers are a super key part of this equation. So as we heard in some of the earlier presentations, oftentimes community health workers come from that same community that the families are. They often have the same background and are able to relate to them more. So they're super key in helping to build a relationship between a family and a school. Oftentimes, there's just an inherent distrust between a minority family and a school, and using a community health worker to help bridge that trust is so valuable. An example that I have is at one of the elementary schools that we were working with, we decided that we were going to do family and parent nights once a month in the evening. And we were going to educate parents on things like math or literacy for kids or different healthy habits. So the very first night we planned, and we didn't have a community health worker on board. And we planned it, we planned the topic, we wrote up flyers, we posted the flyers, we were all excited about it, and it turned out it was on the same night as the Mexico-US soccer game. So we had one person show up. So after that, we got our community health worker, whose name was Olga, we got Olga involved, and she was able to, first off, help us with good times of when people are available and making sure we're not doing it on the biggest soccer game of the year. And she was able to help us with the exact topics that families wanted to hear about. And then most importantly, she was able to be there standing in the parking lot, shaking hands with parents and being that familiar face to connect them to the school. She was able to call all of them the week before, the night before, and remind them. And at that second parent night, we had literally a full cafeteria of 100 parents show up, all thanks to just building trust with a community health worker. So before I wrap this up, I wanted to give a culminating example of a school, community, family partnership that happened in our county. And this was last month in October. And it was International Bike and Walk to School Day. And we celebrated it at 10 different schools. So first off, we had leadership support on board. We actually had the principals. They were the ones that promoted this to their schools and staff and faculty. We were able to connect it to academic achievement, since we knew that if kids exercise first thing in the morning, they were able to focus better in class. We fit in with their time constraints because it was a before-school activity. And we, of course, were supporting a healthy environment because they were getting exercise and we were feeding them healthy breakfast. We had the community health workers on board from the very first start. They were able to get parents on board. We encouraged parents to actually walk and bike with their kids. We had libraries that had bicycle repair stations at their libraries for any kid that needed a free bicycle repair. City officials handed out bike helmets They liked that. Local businesses encouraged their employees to also participate, and a lot of them were parents. Universities provided volunteers for the event. And then police officers and firefighters were there to make sure it was a safe event and to answer any questions for parents and students about safety. So, these are two pictures from our community. The first one on the left with all the bikes. This is actually that morning of Walk to School Day at one of the schools that I was at. There were so many bikes and only one bike rack. They didn't fit, and so parents literally had to come drive their cars to the school, pick up the kids' bikes, and put them in the cars just because there wasn't enough room. We all thought that it was pretty a wonderful problem to have. So because of this, one of the businesses that were there actually ended up partnering with the American Lung Association and donated some bike racks to the schools. And this second picture you see is a walking school bus. You guys have never seen one of these. They are one of the cutest things ever. And so with one of the elementary schools, a bunch of the students and parents wanted to continue this, but it was really hard for each parent to have to walk their kid to school every day, so they came together and formed an actual walking school bus that only one parent had to volunteer for each day. A couple other things that happened. One of the local organizations, it's called Turnaround Bikes, was able to identify kids that needed bikes and train high school students to fix up old bikes and actually donate them to the kids. And then just the awareness that this event created about the need for safe routes to walk and bike to school was really great. And the community conversations that happened after that had a lot of potential for improving our built environment. That is my last slide. Thank you very much.